This is poetry from Studio 47. Welcome. Today's poet is Geoffrey Chaucer. Chaucer was born sometime in 1340 in London, England. We're not sure of the exact date. Considering that the Black Plague swept through Europe between 1347 and 1351, it could be said that Chaucer's greatest achievement in life was simply surviving his first 10 years of it. He was born into a medieval society that had a strict social hierarchy. There was the nobility at the top, then there was the church, and then there was everyone else. Social mobility, however, was possible, and his family is an example of that. His father, John Chaucer, was a wine merchant who became deputy chief butler to King Edward III. This meant that Chaucer the Elder mixed with people of different languages and social backgrounds. It is easy to imagine this rubbing off on his son, Geoffrey. As a teenager, Chaucer became a page for the Countess of Ulster. This was a type of apprenticeship that would groom him for the royal court. Small wonder, then, when he was in France, that he was captured in 1359 and ransomed for money. When he returned to England, he became more firmly a part of King Edward III's household. In fact, he married a lady-in-waiting, Philippa de Rote, and started studying law. Chaucer went on diplomatic missions to Spain, France, and other parts of Europe. When he was on a political mission to Italy in 1372, he became influenced by the works of Dante and Boccaccio. Although Chaucer often wrote in French, Italian, and Latin, he was a champion of his native language, English. It wasn't fashionable to write in English, but Chaucer chose to do it anyway. His works include The Book of the Duchess, The House of Fame, Parliament of Fowls, Troilus and Cressida, and of course, The Canterbury Tales. He wrote this ambitious and important text between 1386 and 1400. By the time he died, with The Canterbury Tales only partially complete, his literary impact was so great that he later became known as the father of English literature. Put another way, The Canterbury Tales changed everything, and its influence cannot be overstated. So what exactly is The Canterbury Tales about? Well, they are a series of stories told on a journey, not unlike how we watch in-flight movies today on airplanes. These tales were meant to be a diversion, an entertainment. In the story, pilgrims have set out from the Tabard Inn in London, and they're on their way to Canterbury Cathedral. This pilgrimage is undertaken for holy reasons, yes, of course, but it also involved travel and a bit of adventure. Today, the journey from London to Canterbury takes roughly 2 hours by train, so you can imagine that, 700 years ago, on muddy roads, such a trip was an ordeal. In order to amuse themselves, the pilgrims tell stories to each other, and whoever tells the best one is promised a nice, fat, juicy steak when they return to London. In the Canterbury Tales, we see a wide range of social classes. Some of these tales are moral, some are full of sexual spice, and through it all, we get a good idea of life back in the 1300s. Importantly, this story is told in English. At the time, this language was looked down upon. No matter, Chaucer thought. He wanted to tell an English story in the English tongue. So he did. When he died in 1400, he was buried in Westminster Abbey. This man, born to commoners, was the very first writer to be buried among the kings and queens of England. You can visit his grave today. It's in an area of the abbey called Poet's Corner. Today, we're going to showcase the opening of the Canterbury Tales. But before we do that, we should talk a little bit about why the pilgrims are going to Canterbury. What's the purpose of their quest? To answer this, we have to start with a man named Thomas à Becket. Becket was childhood friends with a boy who would later become king, more specifically, King Henry II. But in spite of their long friendship, these men would soon become bitter adversaries. The looming fight between them would become the original quarrel between church and state. When Becket was murdered in Canterbury Cathedral in 1170, he was quickly ordained a saint. In fact, Becket became the very first English saint. It started when Becket, who was the Archbishop of Canterbury, and therefore the Pope's representative in England, refused to do Henry II's bidding. Becket was resolutely on the side of the Pope, which frustrated Henry II to no end. One evening, when Henry was particularly annoyed with Becket, he yelled out, "Will no one rid me of this turbulent priest?" That's the popular version anyway. He didn't actually say that, though. Rather, the hot-headed Henry II shouted something far more cruel and far more awful. He pointed at the knights around him and roared, "What miserable drones and traitors have I nourished and brought up in my household who let their lord be treated with such shameful contempt by a low-born cleric?" Three knights heard this call to action and galloped to Canterbury. They entered Becket's cathedral. He did not run away, although he could have, and he remained in prayer before a small altar. With a heavy sword, one of the knights wound up and took the top of Becket's head clean off. When Becket fell to the floor, one of the knights said, "Let's be off. This fellow won't be getting up again." As they prepared Becket for his funeral, his monks discovered that he was wearing a hair shirt. What's that, you might be asking? What's a hair shirt? Well, it's a shirt woven out of horsehair, and it was teeming with lice. Becket wore this to remind himself of Christ's sacrifice and that life was full of pain. At news of this, Becket became a martyr for Christ. He was God's man on earth, and sainthood followed, especially since it allowed the Pope to publicly embarrass Henry II. After Thomas was canonized, after he was made Saint Thomas, an elaborate tomb was constructed in Canterbury. Soon pilgrims from all over the country were paying their respects. Miracles began to happen, and the sick were cured. The Canterbury Tales, not surprisingly, is about a group of pilgrims setting off from London. They're going to Becket's tomb in the hopes of miracles. The opening lines, written in Middle English, not Old English, sets the stage for us. I'm delighted to introduce my colleague and friend, Dr. Sarah Rood. She specializes in literature from this period, and she's going to read the beginning for us. Sarah, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. I do love this poetry for this time of year especially. Chaucer is writing in these opening lines about things that happen in spring. He's talking about spring rain. He's talking about warmer wind. He's talking about the sun being higher in the sky. The birds are singing. And people want to be outside. And I think that's something that we all understand here in the Midwest, even if we expect this weather maybe in May instead of April, like he describes. Wander April, with his shure sorte, the drought of March hath pierced to the rota, unbothered every vein in switch liqueur, of which virtue engendered is the fleur. When Zephyrus ache with his sweat of breath, inspired hath in every halt and heath the tender croppers, and the youngest son hath in the ram his half course irona, and smaller fooles mak in melodia, that sleepen all the nicht with apnea, so pricketh him nature in her courages, than longen folk to go on pilgrimages. And Palmer is for to seeken strange strondes, to fair no hallways, couth and sundry londes, and specially from every shearer's end of Engeland to Canterbury they wend, the holy blissful martyr for to seeke, that him hath holpen, one that they were seeke. Befell that in that season, on a day, in Southwark, at the tabard as he lay, ready to wenden on me pilgrimage to Canterbury with full devout courage, and nicht was come into that hostelrie, well 29 in a compania of sundry folk, be aventuri falla in fellowship, and pilgrimes were they alla, that toward Canterbury wolden rida. The chambres and the stables were in weeda, and well we were in ezed at a besta, and shortly, when the sun was to resta, so had he spoken with him ever it shone, that he was of her fellowship anon. And made forward early for Teresa, to talk our way there as e yo devisa. But natheless, weel that e have team and spasa, ere that e further in this tale passa, may thinketh it accordant to resume, to tell you all the condition of each of him, so as it seemed me, and which they were in, and of what degree, and ache in what array that they were in, and at a knicht than wool e first begin.
Poetry from Studio 47 is hosted and curated by Patrick Hicks. This episode was recorded at Augustana University and produced by Peter Folliard. Thank you for listening.